You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Welcome, everybody, to tonight's live broadcast of TPC this January evening, the 15th. When the year started just a couple of weeks ago, I intended to crack the jaw of the new year, and helping me do that tonight is one heavyweight guest after the other. We'll be landing haymakers for the next 3 hours, and it starts with a gentleman who was born in the north of England until he decided all was lost there and came to the United States to attend Stanford Graduate School of Business. He spent over 40 years in the mainstream media covering financial journalism here in the United States, and I'm not talking about for the slouches either. How about for the Wall Street Journal editorial page? How about Barron's, Fortune, Forbes, and Market Watch? He moonlighted at National Review until he was purged in 1997. Also worked for Senator Orrin Hatch once upon a time. Of course, you know him perhaps most fondly for his seminal work, Alien Nation, Common Sense About America's Immigration Disaster. And then on Christmas Eve of 1999, he gave us all a gift, one that keeps giving to this day when he launched VDare.com. He is, of course, the one and only Peter Brimelow. Peter, welcome back to the broadcast tonight.
Thanks for having me on, James. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, my friend. Well, let's begin, if we could, with a quick word about the passing of a fellow truth teller, one of those very rare independent and honest journalists. Of course, I'm talking about Colin Flaherty. If we don't mention it, nobody does. This is a man who deserves to be remembered. His work deserves to live forever. What can you tell us, Peter? I know you covered that for VDare.com this week as well.
Well, Colin basically was one of the early examples of what seemed like the great promise of the internet. You know, he was able to build a significant journalist operation. Journalistic operation, basically on YouTube. He came out of the mainstream media, really like I did, but he got interested in things that you really discourage from writing about in the mainstream media. In his case, it was black crime. And he built an extremely successful YouTube channel just reporting the facts on it. He wasn't actually particularly ideological. I mean, he hated it if people wanted to ask him about Jews and so on. He was just focused entirely on the issue of black and white crime. And he called, the Black Lives Matter nonsense the greatest lie of our generation, because, of course, the truth is exactly the reverse. It's whites who are suffering at the hands of blacks. And in the mid-aughts, he was, before the Great Purge that happened in the middle of the last decade, he was actually making $12,000 to $15,000 a month off of his YouTube channel, richly deserved. And then, of course, they demonetized it and eventually blocked out all of his YouTube channel, as they did with Jared Taylor, who I think is your next guest. It's part of this enormous crackdown, which has basically reversed the promise of the internet. We're just really hanging on by our fingernails right now. The situation is not as bad as it was. I was active in American politics in the 70s. In those days, we relied on newsletters to get the word out. We're not quite that bad, but we're really, the internet's been really clamped down on in the last 5 years. Anyway, that's what it came down to. I mean, Colin built a great career there, and it was essentially destroyed by the tech censors. I interviewed him just a year or so ago, actually originally our own YouTube channel, which of course had been subsequently purged. What struck me was how remarkable, remarkably good humoured he was. Even though he knew at that time he was under death sentence, both professionally and personally from his cancer. He was remarkably cheerful, puffed away on his great big cigar and basically seemed very happy, but of course completely unyielding on the basic question, which is that you have to be able to report the reality of black and white crime, which of course we're not allowed to do in the mainstream media.
Well, he did it, and he did it very well. Perhaps he had no peer with in that regard. I Again, an unfortunate topic. He had been interviewed on this program as well, was scheduled to speak at American Renaissance, of course, as late as November of last year. But one of the things that you mentioned, and quite rightly, Peter, when you and I were exchanging messages in advance of tonight's appearance, was that people, there really is a market out there and an appetite for this particular brand of knowledge, the kind of knowledge that Colin Flaherty was so good at getting out there. The regime won't let them know. The regime media, as we call it, won't let them know. I guess that the two... And let me know if there's any others that are out there. Certainly, VDare covers it from an institutional perspective. But I guess the two greatest chroniclers of black-on-white interracial crime and violence left now in the wake of Colin's passing would be Ken Gividen at DailyKen.com and, of course, Paul Kersey, who's a friend of ours.
Right. That's right. Jared Taylor does as well, of course. What do we find? I actually don't particularly want to go black-on-white crime. I want to cover immigration. That's what we're very narrowly focused on. But the problem is we keep getting dragged back into it because it is just so popular. Ken writes a monthly summary for us, called A Month in the Death of White America, with the pictures and so on. It's heartbreaking, actually, children and young women and so on being killed all the time. And it's always one of our most successful features. We just get dragged into it regardless of... the issue of American worker displacement by immigrants, although it's very real and it's personal to people, it just doesn't have the sex appeal that's black and white. It's because people know they've been lied to. You know, you can see it, you know, the people know they've been lied to, and they've learned all the various tricks that the mainstream media has to hide what's going on. And you can see it in the emails we get and in the Twitter feed, and also in Gab, which is Gab. Are you off Facebook, by the way?
You know what? I was one of the first to get banned from Facebook. We had that back in 2000. Well, I think we've been on longer than perhaps even Facebook, going back to 2004. But in the very early days of Facebook and Twitter, we were on Facebook. We got banned. God, it had to be 15 years ago now.
Yes, that's right. They've destroyed it as a source of... of information. But the result of that is, of course, that to some extent the internet is balkanizing, and there are many different sources of ways of getting things now. It isn't like just one or two like it used to be. It's kind of irritating because you have to hunt around. But for example, I spoke for Jared Taylor's America Renaissance conference, and they recently just in November, and they recently just posted. All the videos, all the different sources of videos, they're obviously not on Facebook anymore, but they're on six different video formats, some of which I never heard of. I never heard of OozeTube. Have you ever heard of OozeTube?
Well, you know, I actually had seen it just in preparing for tonight's conversation. I saw that your speech at American Renaissance just a few weeks ago, which we will be covering later this hour, has been put, as you just mentioned, up to six different competing video sharing platforms, which is great for us. This is what is it? Necessity is the mother of invention. I mean, this is where we're at now.
Right. The trouble, of course, I know that in Jared Taylor's case, well, it sounds like a break coming up.
This is a media pro, Peter Brimelow is. He's been doing, my God, you go back to Alien Nation. Well, look, he was in the mainstream media for 40 years. You just heard it in his bio. He knows it better than anybody. When the music starts, we stop. But we'll be back in 3 minutes. He foreshadowed some of the things to come. We're going to be talking about immigration. We're going to be talking about his speech that he recently gave and so much more. Don't miss a minute of it. We'll be right back.
Hello, TPC family. It's James, and I've got to tell you that I sleep better at night knowing that there are organizations like the Conservative Citizens Foundation. The purpose of the Conservative Citizens Foundation is to promote the principles of limited government, individual liberty, equality before the law, property rights, law and order, judicial restraint, and states' rights, while at the same time exploring the dangers posed by liberalism to our national interests and cultural institutions. The Conservative Citizens Foundation also seeks to educate educate the public on the dangers of extremist ideologies like critical race theory and cultural Marxism. I've worked with the good people at the Conservative Citizens Foundation for many years, and their work comes with my complete endorsement. For more information and to keep up with all the latest conservative news headlines, please check out their website, AmericaFirst.com. That's MERICA1ST.com. AmericaFirst.com.
Scott Radley here. Most Americans are painfully aware that the nation is on the wrong track and in dire straits. Unfortunately, most political pundits only nibble around the edges when they claim to address the issues. Even worse, many of the so-called solutions are simply rewarmed servings of what got us into the mess we currently face. And the politicians think we're so gullible and naive that we'll buy their lies that they have reformed and now understand where they led us astray. Unfortunately, the truth of the matter is that they simply wish to continue to hold power. The solution to America's challenges is found in returning to the timeless principles found in the United States Constitution. My book and lecture series will reawaken in Americans an understanding and love of the principles which made this nation the freest, most prosperous, happiest, and most respected nation on earth. Visit topreservethenation.com and order my book and lectures to begin the restoration of this great nation.
Are you a native son or daughter of the South who pleads the stars and bars? Someone not born in Dixieland, but who is a Johnny Reb at heart and looking for a place to shop that promotes Southern heritage? Well, your search is over. Dixie Republic is the place to go for all things celebrating the Confederacy and promoting Southern pride. Inside the log cabin just outside Traveler's Rest, South Carolina, Dixie Republic has t-shirts, hats, videos, flags, books, belt buckles, and some of the best mouth-watering barbecue sauce that will ever touch your lips. There's just about everything you want honoring the South at Dixie Republic. Well, you say that South Carolina's a bit too far for you to drive? Have no fear, my friend. All of this is just a mouse click away. Go online at www.dixierepublic.com. Your home for all things celebrating the Confederacy and promoting Southern pride. It's time to jump back into the political cesspool. To be part of the show and have your voice heard around the world, call us at 1-866-986-6397.
Well, welcome back, everybody. Now that we're settled in, let's enjoy the rest of tonight's show. Peter Brimelow with us for the first hour, and if you didn't pick up on it by now, Jared Taylor is immediately following in the second. So back-to-back solid hours of hard-hitting talk radio here on TPC tonight. And, Peter, I was just thinking during the break, it occurred to me recently that leftists in the media are increasingly writing stories exclusively for one another. It's as though they are preening for themselves because, of course, as we know, at the very least half of the country has completely moved on. And I don't just mean that they distrust the media. I mean they have zero faith in the regime media, the system media, as Sam Dixon calls it, to the point where whatever the media says, they are inclined to do the exact opposite as sort of a default. And I think, again, that puts the spotlight squarely on the work that people like you and Jared are doing with American Renaissance and VDare, of course, respectively. And I'll draw a sharp focus on that by making mention of something that you picked up on last week as well, the anniversary of January 6th. Well, we all heard what anniversary the media was covering on January the 6th and the bizarre way in which they're just trying to shoehorn and force people to believe this narrative that this was the greatest attack on our democracy, quote unquote, that has ever occurred. But they weren't mentioning, in regard to black on white crime that we were talking about a moment ago, they weren't mentioning the deaths of Channing Christian and Christopher Newsom, which we mentioned last week occurred on January 6th as well. Your thoughts on that before we pivot to Biden calling for more censorship on the internet? I don't even know if that's possible, but he did. We'll talk about that. But the media writing stories for one another, their coverage of January 6th, the complete memory holding of the Knoxville horror, and I know that you've covered January 6th, or V-Day rather has, and I read a great article on that just a few days ago as well.
I think you've had Brad Griffin on recently from Occidental Dissent, and I think he's completely right that there's a sort of sociological issue here that the people who write and read the mainstream media, he has an acronym for them, but they're basically, you know, the coastal people have simply lost touch with the rest of the country, and they're just going off into their own world, and they really don't have to listen to anything else because they've substantially muzzled the internet, which they would never leave anyway. I think I'll go a bit beyond that. I think it ultimately has an ethnic and a sociological base. So if you look at the structure of American politics right now, there are really two parties. There's the white party, which is the Republican Party. Most whites vote the Republican Party. And then there's a minority party, which is the Democrat Party, which is led, of course, by, to a considerable extent, Jews, homosexuals, and so on, and to a certain extent, radicalized women. But it's fundamentally a minority party, and it's increasingly in the hands of black politicians who basically determine which way, you know, who's going to actually control, who's actually going to be the face of the party. And we'll see that when this generation of gerontocrats croaks, when Pelosi and so on and Schumer and so on, move out. They'll almost certainly be replaced by people of color. That's going to make the division much deeper because they will be very alien to most historic Americans watching these people on the television screens in middle America. So I think the country's frankly coming apart. I'm not just getting into the Civil War question here. I'm simply saying that the basis of the two parties are just fundamentally distinct, and they don't really have very much in common.
Oh, and you were right, Peter, to mention Brad Griffin, because we had him on, recently and several times throughout the course of, well, really our entire run, but especially last year, to talk about this question, the basic balkanization of America, the political stress level in this country is as high as it's ever been, you know, going back to the war between the states. But more cowbells, as Christopher Walken may have called for it on Saturday Night Live. You sent me a story, quite interesting, Biden calling for more censorship on the internet just last Wednesday. Can you give us the context of that?
Well, he gave this speech down in Atlanta, basically trying to capitalize on the January 6th myth to push their agenda of federalizing elections. I mean, they went a long way in 2020 towards changing election processes and things like mail-in ballots and so on in ways which favor the Democrats. And they want to basically institutionalize that. They're afraid that the Republicans may wake up. They were asleep at the switch in 2020. They may wake up and take all of this stuff back. And as far as the internet's concerned, he just expects that. I still don't truly understand this obsession with COVID. I mean, I'm old enough to remember, Asian flu in the 50s and Hong Kong flu in the 60s and 70s. And, you know, went right through population, there's a great deal of damage, but there's nothing like this hysteria about it. I think one of the things, we have a columnist called Lance Weldon who just writes a lot about, he does a lot of stuff that's derived from academic journal articles. And he's found stuff that's determined that, there is a form of left-wing authoritarianism. Traditionally, the academics have always believed that authoritarianism is a right-wing thing, going back to the Frankfurt School, which, of course, was basically pathologically anti-Gentile. But it turns out that the left polls the same way, if you look at their psychological profiles. There's a lot of authoritarian leftists around. And of course, as I said in my talk to Jared's group, I mean, we have to face the fact that we're dealing here with a communist coup that's going on in the country. The people who run the Democrat Party, the Biden administration, are fundamentally communists. What I mean by that is not that they believe in the labor theory of value and that they get to profitism. It's that they're left-wing authoritarians. They simply have no patience for debate at all. Right, violent debate, and that's what we see with. I mean, Biden's obviously just a cipher. He's writing stuff that's put into his hands by all these leftists he has working for him. But that's what he's saying. You know, they just think all debate ought to be suppressed.
Well, you're certainly right about Biden's role in this whole production. But he did say in that speech that we mentioned that people who disagree with his bill to federalize elections are domestic enemies and are on the side of George Wallace, Bull Connor, and Jefferson Davis. Well, you know, first of all, if anybody accused me, I am on the side of those people. But if anybody ever used that as a pejorative, I would just say thank you and move on. And I wrote this book, Racism Schmacism, back in 2010 that is still quite timely. Do you think, Peter, that the sting of all of this incessant name-calling that the left does to anyone to the right of Comrade Stalin has just really lost its potency, even with the most milquetoast of Republicans?
I think that is it. I think the Republicans are on the move. You know, I've been involved in the immigration debate now for well, nearly 30 years, actually, this year. And I've been writing. I wrote my first cover story for National Review on immigration in 1992. And at that stage, you'd get a lot of Republicans, and particularly elected officials, who either didn't want to address the issue or who were just on the wrong side. And that's why you saw, you know, the Bush administration making repeat efforts to get amnesty through. Even as late as 2015, Jeb Bush was campaigning on illegal immigration being an act of love. Do you remember that? Anyway, that's all gone now. So to that extent, that's wonderful. The whole issue is precipitating out along on partisan land. So I think there has been great, you know, great progress there. Whether it's enough progress, fast enough, is a different question.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, we are in the 11th hour, of course, and so this is something we'll get to at the end of this hour, and I'll be asking the same question of Jared in the next. But, Well, I don't want to spoil it because we have just only seconds remaining before we come to this particular break. But I will tell you what's coming up in the next segment. So we'll talk a little bit more. We're going to get into a little more depth with Peter about the speech that has been referenced now at least a couple of times, the recent speech he gave at American Renaissance just last fall. This is a communist coup, but white America is on the move. What does Peter think? What does that mean? We'll find out. Then we're going to get into immigration and worker data, employment data, interesting stuff, and SCOTUS. It's all coming up before the end of the hour. Stay tuned, everybody.
Protecting your liberties. You're listening to Liberty News Radio. USA Radio News with Wendy King.
The FBI is assisting with a hostage situation at a Jewish synagogue in Texas. A man claiming to be armed has taken the rabbi and three others hostage at Congregation Beth Israel in Colleyville, Texas. The suspect is claiming to have put explosives in unknown locations and has demanded to speak with his sister, who he says is Afia Siddiqui, a Pakistani neuroscientist who was convicted more than a decade ago in New York of trying to kill American military personnel and FBI agents in Afghanistan. The hostage taker inside the synagogue is apparently demanding to have his sister freed from prison, where she's serving an 86-year sentence. The Biden administration and Texas Governor Greg Abbott say they're closely monitoring the situation in Colleyville, which is just northwest of Dallas. This is USA Radio News.
There are many things to think about if you are buying a home or refinancing your present one.
Like, what's better, a direct lender or a mortgage broker? We like to think that a direct lender like Fellowship Home Loans is best.
As a direct lender, there is no middleman and endless requests for more documents. This could save you time and impact your terms and rates.
As a direct lender, Fellowship Home Loans can often close your loan in less than 3 weeks. Let's talk about it at 800-804-SAVE. That's 800-804-7283 or online at fellowshiphomeloans.com.
Regardless of your needs, Fellowship Home Loans wants to be your go-to source for home loans. Talk to a person, not a machine, at 800-804-SAVE. That's 800-804-7283 or online at fellowshiphomeloans.com.
Home is actually our middle name, Fellowship Home Loans.
Welcome home.
Intercontinental Capital Group, DBA Fellowship Home Loans, Equal Housing Opportunity Lender, MLS number 60134.
A shooting at an Oregon concert venue has left six people injured and police looking for the shooter. The Eugene Police Department said it received reports of shots fired outside Wow Hall about 9:30 on Friday night. The shooting took place during a concert by rappers Lil Bean and Zay Bang. Eugene Police Chief Chris Skinner.
We responded down here within 2.5 minutes to a scene and a call of gunshots here at the Wow Hall at 8th and Lincoln. We've got six victims that we know of gunshot wounds. One is critical and is at the hospital in surgery. Don't know the status of the others, but as you can imagine, the investigation is going to be ongoing. It's in its early stages, and what we're really struggling with is the fact that we know we have witnesses. We know we probably have video and audio evidence that's available. We just need people to feel comfortable to bring that forward so we can better understand what happened.
You're listening to USA Radio News.
Welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
Welcome back, everybody. Still two segments to go with the great Peter Brimelo. If you're not familiar with the work that Peter does at Vita.com, familiarize yourself post-haste and support the work there. It is at the very tip of the spear of all that you find dear if you're a listener of this program. So very fortunate to be able to call Peter a friend, and always happy to have him as a guest on this broadcast. His work is par excellence. VDare.com. There is no rival, except for maybe Amren. We're right there in the same category with Jared Taylor, who's coming up next. Now, Peter, we're going to be talking about American worker displacement in just a moment. But first, we've been nibbling around the edges a little bit about your most recent speech at Amren. It's been referenced a couple of times. Let's go into the meat of it. It is entitled, "This is a communist coup, but white America is on the move." What was the message you shared at that gathering back in November? Condense it for a radio audience, if you would.
Well, you know, it's very important that we start using words correctly. You know, the other side has these words like racist and white supremacy and things, which they've weaponized. And we have to weaponize back. And I think that, as I say, though, we should recognize the fact that what we're dealing with here is a communist coup. Brad, who I'm quoting a lot tonight, has done some very good stuff looking at the polls on how, you know, at some point in the mid-aughts, around about 2008, the Democrats simply lost faith in free speech and various other traditional liberal things. They were no longer classical liberals. They'd become completely authoritarian. This showed up in the polls. Yeah. I was aware of it because the immigration numbers shifted. We'd always had overwhelming support for immigration restriction, but that altered in the during the Obama administration. But the reason was the Democrats switched sides. There's always been a lot of Democrats who are in favor of restricting immigration for labor union reasons and other reasons. But at some point in there, the intelligentsia of the Democratic Party convinced people that they had to support immigration because, of course, they see it as their path to power. Well, anyway, as I say, the Democratic intelligentsia has just decisively moved to being left totalitarians. And we ought to just frankly say that. And it's been run, you know, the Biden administration is basically run by the same kinds of people who brought communism to Russia. You know, they basically deracinated secular Jews to a considerable extent. And they're motivated by intense fear and loathing of, the white Gentile hinterlands. And they simply want to suppress them. And that's what's going on with January 6th. We have a Garland archipelago, like the Gulag archipelago. And they want to put us all in it. But the other thing I was going to say is that there's real dramatic structural change in the white vote going on. It's basically the white vote is basically moving away from its traditional allegiance with the Democrats and labor unions and so on. I'm acutely aware of this because we've moved now recently to West Virginia, the Eastern Pine Island of West Virginia. West Virginia used to be, as you know, we have this castle here which we're going to start holding meetings in. West Virginia used to be an overwhelming Democratic state, although it is more than 90% white, which sounds a lot, but of course it wasn't.
Very interesting, yes, yes.
And what you find is that, in a nutshell, Trump, of course, carried West Virginia by 40 points. And what you find is that the historical Confederate counties and the historical Union counties, West Virginia, of course, seceded from this Confederacy, are both now voting for Trump. Even the areas which were traditionally Republican and traditionally Democrat have converged on the Republican Party. This shift is taking place basically because they've got the message from the Democrat Party that it doesn't like them anymore. You know, it's fundamentally an anti-white party. And just to finish up, one of the signs which will amuse you, I think, is of this is I've seen a lot of agitation recently on the left that they discover people flying the battle flag. all over the country. And I have on the in the version of this that I posted on Vidar, the transcript, there's a photograph of a man with a huge beard standing in front of a huge truck. He's from Maine. And there's a huge battle flag on the flag on the front of his truck, and his name is Mark Pelche. He's a descendant from the Quebecois who immigrated into Maine in the 19th century. He has nothing in common with the South, whatever, but he identifies with it. And that's the key.
Well, I can tell you why, and I'm sure you know this. Of course, for people outside of the South, the Confederate battle flag means a resistance to tyranny. And for those of us in the South who descend from that line of fighting men, as I do, it means that. Plus, it is, in fact, our own blood. So a little extra enhancement there. But yes, globally, that flag, more than perhaps any other, has become a symbol of resistance to tyranny, whatever tyranny you may be oppressed by.
Right. You can see it in Europe sometimes. So that's right. The two messages. One is that we're facing a communist coup. And the second is that whites are reacting to it. Now, of course, the beneficiaries of this will be the Republican Party. It looks like they're going to sweep the legislature at the end of this year. And, of course, then they will proceed to do nothing. But they could do a lot if they were determined as and the first thing, of course, what they should do is simply impeach both Biden and Harris. And that would make McCarthy president. And they could do it. And if they can't get 60 scientists to do it, and they could put immense pressure on some scientists to flip, it will tie up the administration for the rest of his life, and it'll reverse this narrative that something all that that was a terrible thing for Trump to be impeached instead of a purely partisan racket like it was.
We've got to talk about this in the next segment. I had intended to get into this with Jared, and I will. Because if I understand correctly, Jared may have gone to the inauguration today of Governor Youngkin in Virginia. So we're going to be asking him.
I believe he's alive. I spoke to him just as he was driving back.
So I'll be asking him if he thinks that a new dawn has occurred in Virginia with the election of Youngkin. We're going to get into what worth the Republicans have. That's the old age-old question, of course. But before we do, and before I take that bait, Peter, hook, line, and sinker, let me ask you this very quickly, about a minute or two before our next break. American worker displacement. I want to be sure to at least touch on this. V-Dare, this is bread and butter for V-Dare. American worker displacement. You had some interesting data in December.
It's a calculation that we make every month based on the job data the federal government provides, but nobody else makes it. And what we find is that there's tremendous displacement surge right through the Obama years, but Trump was able to reverse it. And actually, in terms of the immigrant workforce population, that was actually falling it began before COVID. And so for the first time for many, many years, you started to see the immigrant workforce population falling, which is why, of course, wages were rising. Real wages were rising right into the beginning of the COVID year. Unfortunately, he didn't pass any laws. He just did it all by regulation and executive action. So, of course, Biden's been able to reverse it. But you know what? There's another election coming up. So maybe they can have another crack at it.
Well, we will certainly find out. Yeah, well, let me ask you. You did fantastic, my friend. Let me ask you this very quickly. Alien Nation, again, a book. If you haven't read it, this is 101 of understanding what's going on with immigration. Came out in the mid-90s, 95, 96. All the way in 2022, how do you feel that book has aged? Is it still timely, still prophetic as we now are almost three decades on?
You know, the fundamental points were all correct. At the time, at that point, people didn't realize that if nothing is done, this will become a majority non-white nation, country. It's not a nation, it will be a country very soon, within 10 to 15 years. And people didn't realize that in 1995, but they do realize it now. Of course, I'd love to update it, but I'm not allowed to. No commercial publisher will touch me.
Yeah, you'll be going to Create Space like I did, or perhaps Antelope Hill or Arctos or something like that. But I'll tell you what, however you get it out there, the message is always right on point. But that book, of course, I mentioned Seminole earlier because it was about 4 years in advance of your launching of VDare. And then, of course, since VDare.com was launched in Christmas Eve of 99, the rest has been history. And you've been at the forefront of all of this. And you've seen as much as anyone, perhaps more than anyone, how the media has turned with regards to you being a part of it for so many years. And even after you you came out so honestly about these so-called taboo issues, we could still get interviews well into the 2000s, the early 2000s anyway, right. And now that's all gone. Your take on how the media has changed with regards to how it presents or even entertains dissidents?
The paradoxical fact that the Internet has just been able to enable them to tighten their discipline, to tighten their narrative. And they would police. They can now police through the Internet if anybody appears on any radio show anywhere who's not on board with them. They can have people call up and take them off the air. And I've had that happen. I'm sure you have too. So the Internet works in a paradoxical way as far as the mainstream media is concerned. It first of all became the mainstream media became much more shrill and intransigent and intolerant. It just started shouting louder when it realized it had opposition. And the second thing is they can police, in that case, they can police their narratives. And that's what they did at Charlottesville, and that's what they did in the Capitol Hill insurrection, which, both of which are hoaxes maintained
well,
by
of course.
Media power.
And if you didn't know that, ladies and gentlemen, check out VDare.com. They document it with the authority that the regime media certainly lacks. VDare.com, VDare.com, VDare.com. Can't endorse it or mention it enough. We got one more segment with its founder, Peter Brimelow. What a great night of radio already. We'll be back with him for one more segment right after this.
Getting the kids to school, cleaning the house, doing the laundry. It seems that the work routine as a stay-at-home mom is never ending. And even though I'm the prime grocery shopper in our family of four, I simply don't have time to scrutinize all the labels on the countless food products I buy. Oh, sure, I've noticed all the latest certification seals. Organic, non-GMO, gluten-free. It definitely seems to be the latest craze. But it was only recently that kosher certification seals caught my attention. You see, my husband had me download an app called Kosher-tify, and it shed light on a century-old certification industry that slipped under the radar screen from the majority of our public. I also noticed a question mark at the end of the app name, and that makes great sense as there's far more questions regarding this industry than answers. In fact, the developers refer to this as the kosher question. Sure, I'm a busy mom and didn't pay attention to our food culture, but now I have transparency, a convenient grocery list feature, and the ability to eat in favor of my family's best interests, and you can discover it too at thekosherquestion.com.
Okay, girls, about finished with your lesson on money?
Daddy, what is a buy-sell spread for gold coins?
Well, when you sell a gold coin to a coin shop that's worth, say, $1,200, you don't actually get $1,200. But don't worry, we're members of UPMA now, so we don't have to worry about that.
Daddy, what if somebody steals our gold?
We don't have any gold at the house. It's stored safely in the UPMA vault, securely and insured.
But the S&P 500 outperformed gold. Daddy, gold is a bad investment.
Some people do think of it that way. But actually, gold is money. And as members of the United Precious Metals Association, we can use our gold at any store, just like a credit card. Or I can ask them to drop it right into Mommy and Daddy's bank account, because we're a UPMA member family.
Find out more at upma.org. That's upma.org.
I'm Michael Hill, president of the League of the South. I and my compatriots are Southern Nationalists. We seek the survival, well-being, and independence of the Southern people, our people. The League wants a South that enjoys the sweet fruits of Christian liberty and prosperity, but our current situation won't allow it. We must have our independence from Washington, D.C. and the globalists. The present system cannot be reformed. Without independence, we will continue down this path of destruction. To us, this is not acceptable. I'm asking you, Southern man and woman, to join us today to free the South. Call us at 256-757-6789 or see our website at www.leagueofthesouth.com. God save the South.
Mm-hmm. welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
Ladies and gentlemen, the party will continue in the next hour. Jared Taylor waiting so patiently for this segment. And Peter Brimelow. Wow, what a start to tonight's show. Peter Brimelow opening the program tonight as we continue a torrid streak through 2022, warming those cold December nights. Rather, I guess it's January now, right? Those cold winter nights with blistering hot radio. VDare.com, ladies and gentlemen, remember that. Comments coming in for Peter with regards to West Virginia. Listener in Gallatin, Tennessee, talking about West Virginia being the last bastion of Southern Democrats. Yes, that's true. Joe Manchin is a D, but might as well be an R. Yes, that's true as well. A listener and female listener in Missouri. One of my first books I read on the subject was Alien Nation. I lent it to a friend, never got it back. Hopefully it red-pilled them. You know, Peter's reputation, of course, and work always precedes him. I want to ask you about SCOTUS, Peter, and some things that VDare.com is involved with and what's next and what people can expect from you in this, our current year. But first, I would just like to make mention of the fact to the audience that you are hopeful, as am I. I've always been a happy, a glass is half full type of warrior. But you're hopeful to the extent that you're still encouraging worthy candidates to seek elected office. We were talking about what's going to be coming in November, which appears to be, by all accounts, at least right now, of the so-called red wave. The Republicans will be the undeserving beneficiaries of backlash politics, inflation politics, and COVID politics and all of that. And they're gonna run through the House and the Senate, I predict, like a knife through hot butter. I don't know how much we're going to get from that, though. We're not going to get, you know, perhaps somebody like Lauren Witzke, who has been on this show, and I know you know as well. What will we get, and what should people who share our very healthy and normal and sensible ideas on the issue, should they be considering a run in this very volatile year?
Well, the two questions, what can we get? The answer is there's a ton of things that actually could be done. I mean, you could actually do something about the tech oligarchs. There are various proposals to breaking up their power using antitrust or the Section 230 thing. You know, there's a heated debate about what could be done. But, of course, you would actually have to do it. And, of course, the huge disappointment of Trump's first 2 years is that the company didn't do things when they had complete control. I, of course, would like to see, I think the first thing most important is the abolition of birthright citizenship, which could be done by statute. And of course, that is in effect an internal invisible war, because it means all these illegals that the Biden is bringing in will not have citizens who become children, and therefore will not affect the political process. So these are things which you know, we really should be. And I actually go over a number of them, and I went over a number of them in my speech. And you know, I think it's wrong to think that people think, well, you know, we can only deal with it with the politically possible. But the fact is that nobody knows what's politically possible. And my, you know, nobody thought gay marriage or all things was politically possible, and yet it happened. It only took about 15 years. So I think that there is a purpose to actually, you know, asking for the moon and seeing what you get. You know, the other thing, James, you know, we're sort of political intellectuals, and we expect to see clean solutions and, you know, an answer winning at the polls and a policy winning the polls and being implemented. But it often doesn't happen like that. I mean, I remember when Reagan won, you know, that was a great victory. I continue to think it was a critical and important victory in the 20th century. But there weren't, a lot of the stuff that happened after he got in was just incremental. And half the time was that stuff didn't happen. That would have happened if the Democrats had been in power. And so I don't know that you're going to see necessary needs a very dramatic resolution. It just needs a resolution that takes place over time. And it may be that the people who lead it are not, you know, heroic leaders of men. They may be Kevin McCarthy, but they just incrementally get things done and move things in a positive direction. One thing that's really, the more I think about the collapse of the Soviet Union, which of course happened as a result of Reagan, you know, we hear about this racial reckoning. There's never been a radical reckoning. We should have gone in and rooted out all of these people who were pro-Soviet, and there are masses of them. If you read Stan Evans' book on McCarthy, you realize that the country was riddled with communists. And of course, it's their children. It's their children and grandchildren, who, as I definitely documented in the speech I gave, you know, who are actually the problem now. People like his Boudin character in San Francisco, the DA there. Bill Ayers, you know, who was influential on Barack Obama. This Jewish woman whose key to Black Lives Matter was actually a terrorist and was pardoned in one of his last acts by President Clinton. You know, all this stuff, we should have gone through and rooted all that out. The Democrats have always been soft on communism. They still are soft on communism. They're implementing communism. They've got to be punished for it. Now, try that on Jared. You know what a gentleman he is. He'll find that very shocking.
Well, hey, make no mistake, you are also a gentleman, maybe more of a cavalier, but certainly a gentleman as well. Let me ask you this, Peter, as we begin to run out of time, and my goodness, how quickly this hour has gone. I want to thank you again for being back on the program with us. Always a pleasure when we're on. We've got to make this certainly a much more common occurrence, but I want to talk to you about what VDARE is up to right now. VDARE is always up to a lot of good things, and we can talk about it in general, but also a lot of people are talking about the Supreme Court decision this week with regards to OSHA. But you've got a brief filed before SCOTUS, I believe, that is certainly much more personal to you. Tell us about that, and then tell us what is upcoming for VDARE and how people can be involved.
We spent a lot of time and money on litigation over the last 3 years, and it's been a brutal struggle, as Jared will tell you from his own experience. And the situation we're in right now is a truly extraordinary one. The government, the mayor of Colorado Springs, who claims to be Republican, withdrew police support from a conference we were going to have there in Colorado Springs a few years ago, I think. And as a result of that, the hotel canceled. Now, this is an issue which has been settled in massive civil rights litigation during the civil rights era. You know, you can't deny people police protection on the basis of who they are, or because you don't like the speech if you're a local government. But they've done that, and not only that, but our first lawyer in Colorado Springs was so eager, excited about this case, because it was just carrying very substantial damages if you infringe on someone's civil rights, that he took the case on contingency. But then the city of Colorado Springs fought to his greatest dodgement, and he ran away, and we had to get another lawyer. And at the moment, we've done very, very badly. We've failed at every level, and so I've had to appeal to the Supreme Court. So we're right on the verge of, if the Supreme Court doesn't take this case, a famous civil rights lawyer said to me when he was discussing it, they're right on the verge of saying that it's okay for local governments to discriminate against people and refuse them police protection on the basis of speech. And the real fear here is, of course, is that the judicial establishment, law enforcement in general, has become systematically anti-white. So they're going to deny us these rights because they think we're white advocates in a way that they wouldn't do to Black Lives Matter or communist groups and that kind of thing. So we need all the help we can get on this, James. I'd like to come on and talk a lot more about this.
Well, you know, we could do a whole hour on this for sure, and it's something that's near and dear to my heart as well. And in fact, I must say publicly, I would tell you privately too, I will tell you publicly, I commend you, I salute you for taking this all the way to the wall, presenting it to the Supreme Court. I stopped short of that, going to the Michigan Court of Appeals with my libel suit, which was just a total monstrosity.
It's disgraceful, yes.
You know that, I know you're familiar.
In your case, there was a problem with a lawyer, wasn't there?
Well, I mean, you know, it was Kyle Bristow. You know, Kyle Bristow was the lawyer who was, of course, very, very, very talented. But, you know, as you know, it takes money and it takes time to do these things. And after getting so thoroughly routed, even though it was, of course, the textbook definition of libel was in our favor, the actual legal definition of libel in our favor, after getting so thoroughly routed on the lower level and then in the Court of Appeals, we just decided to discretion, the better part of valor, and all of that. But so that being said...
Well, you know, this is one... We're very lucky to be there, and I'm very lucky to have my wife, Lydia, the pal, who's our publisher, because we've, over 20 years, we've developed a really solid base of supporters who are standing with us, and that's the only reason we're able to do this. And if we don't roll the dice, we won't get anywhere, so we're just...
That's right. Well, that's the old Wayne Gretzky, the famous hockey player quote. You miss all the shots you don't take, right, Peter? So Godspeed to you, my friend, in this case before the Supreme Court. Hopefully they'll agree to hear it. And, of course, they don't have to if people understand how this works at that level. But perhaps they will. And you don't know. If you don't try, you don't know. You never ask,
so
you never know.
That's, of course, why we just that's why we decided to buy this Catholic book, especially we can't have conferences here. This is a Morgan County vote, which is where Burger Springs is, voted 75% for Trump. So it's not like we're in hostile territory.
Well, I would ask you, the Vidar Castle, ladies and gentlemen, Google it if you don't know about it. But I would ask if we could perhaps look forward to a congressman or Senator Brimelow later this year, but he would have to descend from the throne at the castle and take a townhouse in Alexandria. And, you know, who wants to do that? No, he's doing the Lord's work. He's doing what he should be doing. But it's an incredible thing.
We're only 2 hours from the U.S. Capitol.
You could commute.
Yeah, so
you could...
It's a different world. So Lydia could commute. She's young enough to do the job.
Well, you know, that would still be a congressman or Senator Brimelow, and she would certainly have our support. That's for sure. Well, Peter, I got to tell you again what a great time it's been as a host to have this hour with you. We will do it again, and we'll look forward to doing it again much more regularly. And I remember, in fact, the last time you were on was the week that my third child was born. So I remember that fondly. That was a little over a year ago now. So we will have you back on very soon. At parting shot from you, my friend, to the audience, feedair.com, of course, the website. Take it away, Peter. Last word.